Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man I've really come to respect in a number of different incarnations in the course of his service in that war is our first guest and only guest for this very special edition of Secure Freedom Radio. He is John Guandolo. These days, he is the president and the founder of Understanding the Threat, an organization that is doing incredibly important work training law enforcement personnel and others about the nature of the jihad that we confront. John comes to this by virtue of a wealth of experience in both government service and in the United States military. He is a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, served in Desert Storm as a Force Recon Marine, a special operator, became a member of the SWAT team of the FBI after he left the service, and ultimately became its commanding officer. Subsequently, he became a counterterrorism special agent for the FBI and has, as a result of all of these experiences, an extraordinary understanding of the threat and what we must do to counter it. It is a great pleasure to have him with us. John Guandolo, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Well, thanks as always for having me, Frank.
There's a lot to talk about, John. You have been active in this fight for a long time, and I guess maybe I would just ask you to sort of describe the nature of the enemy that you want us to understand and that so few seem to do at the moment.
Well, I actually think it's simpler than we seem to be making it. We just take the enemy at their word. We have a global Islamic movement whose stated objective is to wage civilization jihad at the national level and to wage jihad across the globe in order to impose an Islamic state under Sharia, Islamic law. That's it. And what we find is that ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Abu Sayyaf, Boko Haram, Muslim Brotherhood, Tabliki Jamaat, Jamaati Islami, all the major Muslim movements in the world all subscribe to that, and they say it and publish it and speak about it. And in fact, when we take comments from jihadis captured on the battlefield, or we intercept plans here in North America or in Europe by security officials, we find that, in fact, whether it's Terry Lee Lowen at the airport in Kansas, or it's the Fort Hood shooter, Major Nadal Hassan, or it is Omar Mateen at the Florida nightclub, the reason they do what they do is because they're commanded to wage jihad, and they're waging jihad. It's that simple.
And yet, what we're told, John Guandolo, by the President of the United States, among others, is that these are lone wolves, that they have nothing to do with Islam. They're following some sort of twisted ideology that is a perversion of Islam, and that it's trying to hijack the faith, that the faith is a peaceful religion, a great Abrahamic faith, and on and on and on. How could what you are saying be not only so simple, but true, and yet be so completely at odds with what the United States government, and I have to say it's been true of previous administrations as well as this one, they've been pushing out as the reality of the problem we're facing?
Well, I think there's a couple big pieces to that, because that's a very important question. First of all, when people say that, whether they're the president or others, the questions that should be asked of them of the media, or if it's somebody in your local area telling you, whether it's a local elected official or your pastor telling you that Islam doesn't stand for this, my first of two questions is, number one, what Islamic law, what Sharia have you actually read? Because 100% of all published Islamic law mandates, obliges jihad until the entire world is under Islamic rule. And 100% of Islamic law only defines jihad as warfare against non-Muslims. And the second question I would ask is, can you show me where the other version of Islam is being taught? Can you name an Islamic school, mosque, or a place like that where the other version is taught, the mystical, peaceful version of Islam? Or give me the name of one 10th grade, 9th grade textbook in an Islamic school that says that, love thy neighbor or the golden rule. And what you'll find is on the planet that doesn't exist. And the reason it doesn't exist is because it's a capital crime in Islam for a Muslim to teach another Muslim something that's not true about Islam.
John, let me ask you a term that you've introduced here that I think is incredibly important to understanding the threat. Is Sharia, and you've referred to an authoritative rendering of it, you've referred to the absence of alternatives to it. First of all, tell us what Sharia is and explain how it is that we do hear Muslims talking about being basically whatever you want it to be, and there's lots of everybody's got their own personal Sharia, that sort of thing.
Well, first of all, Sharia is Islamic law, and it's law that comes from two sources, the example of the Prophet Muhammad and the Quran, which is the uncreated word of God. And in Sharia, we see there are a few things that are true. Number one, if you actually read Sharia, you see that all of Sharia is what I would call vanilla in its understanding of its relationship with the non-Muslim world, in that there is only the understanding that the entire function of Islam, according to Islam, which comes, I'm talking about the Quran and the example of the Prophet Muhammad, the perfect man, according to Muslims, that the requirement of Islam, the very purpose of Islam, is to eliminate all the places on the earth where Sharia is not the law of the land for all people. And the vehicle to do that is called jihad, which is warfare against non-Muslims.
So it's not personal struggle, as we've been told?
No, it's not a personal struggle. And the idea that, and this is key, is that the number one way that they are fighting this battle primarily up until, they're still doing it now, but right up until the kinetic really hits, and even through the kinetic, as we're seeing, they're masters of this, but it's in the information realm, what most Americans would know as propaganda, and they're very adept at that. And that is where they're fighting us. And so they get us to understand that the battle is really not against Muslims, because the fact that our leaders have bought off on the idea that Islam just simply doesn't even have a concept of warfare like this against innocent people is simply nonsense. And again, I go back to number one, if you want to learn about Islam, which is what we do in our courses for law enforcement and civilians and leadership, is we teach to our audiences what Muslims teach to other Muslims when we're not around. And we find that's a very successful model, because Islamic law makes it a capital crime for Muslims to teach other Muslims anything that's not true about Islam, and it's obligatory for Muslims to lie to non-Muslims when the goal is obligatory, which includes jihad. So if I want to know about Islam, I don't ask a Muslim, and especially not a Muslim leader. I go and actually look at what they're teaching each other when I'm not around, and then you get exactly what ISIS and Al-Qaeda say. That's what they're teaching their children.
We're going to talk about each of these points. John, you've laid a very rich table here of things to discuss in greater detail, not least of which is this point that you've just alluded to, that you cannot necessarily take at their word those who are described endlessly as leaders of the Islamic community or Muslim community in America. And when we come back, we'll be discussing with John Guandolo, the president and founder of Understanding the Threat, why it is that those so-called figures, those authorities, those leaders cannot be relied upon to give us the straight dope, and why the United States government is in the mess it's in terms of understanding the threat, because they have been relying so extensively under successive administrations on such leaders. That and much more with John Guandolo and me, Frank Gaffney, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. According to the New York Times, President Obama said during a rare visit to the CIA to discuss the second phase in the battle against ISIS on April 13th, that the U.S.-led coalition had momentum against ISIS and that ISIS fighters realized their cause is lost. But the previous day, the New York Times ran a story with the headline, ISIS expands reach despite military and financial setbacks, noting that although ISIS has suffered losses on the ground in Iraq and Syria, it has expanded its presence in northern Africa, Afghanistan, and Europe. There also has been little progress in stopping ISIS's efforts to recruit homegrown terrorists worldwide. The president is in denial about the threat from ISIS. His trip to the CIA, which should have occurred 5 years ago when the violence broke out in the Middle East, was little more than a publicity stunt. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. Our guest for this hour-long conversation about the threat of global jihad and what we need to do to understand it and to counteract it with John Guandolo, a very courageous and, I think, quite impressive man who has developed a course for training the rest of us about how to understand the threat called Understanding the Threat. And you can find out more about it at understandingthethreat.com. John Guandolo, we were talking about leaders of the Muslim community and why you cannot take them at face value when they make certain representations about what their community believes or what their faith tradition is. Who are these so-called leaders, and why is it the case that we can't take them at their word?
Well, the leaders in the United States of the Islamic community are, without exception, or maybe with literally one or two exceptions in the entire country, members of the Muslim Brotherhood movement. And so we have leaders, and let me just be more specific, the key organizations like the Islamic Society in North America and all of their subsidiary Islamic societies, Muslim Student Association, of which they're now closing in on a number, getting close to 1,000 of them on every major college campus in America. You've got the Islamic centers, mosques, masjids, they all refer to the same thing. We have over 2,400 of those in all 50 states, and the vast majority of those belong to the Muslim Brotherhood, who specifically says they subscribe to this doctrine, that they want to establish an Islamic state under Sharia. They say it in their bylaws in English, which we have available on our website. And so it's no, there's no confusion about what this is and what the problem is.
Most of us, I guess, if we know anything about the Muslim Brotherhood, have an association to its conduct in recent years in taking over and then ultimately losing control of the Egyptian government. The Director of National Intelligence of the United States, our top intelligence official, a couple of years back, 2011, I believe it was, described this as a largely secular group that had eschewed violence and al-Qaeda and had no overarching agenda, at least internationally. truth squad that statement for us, would you, based on what you know about these characters?
Well, I go back to, you just have to read what the Brotherhood's motto says. You know, jihad in the way of Allah is our, you know, dying martyrdom is our highest aspiration. Jihad is our way. And then again, the bylaws, which says that we're an Islamic organization that seeks to establish Allah's law in the land, and that we must fight the enemies and tyrants of Allah as a prelude to establishing the Islamic State, right out of their bylaws. So what
do you make of the fact that the top intelligence official of the United States, and I gather, John, that what he was doing was not just sort of extemporaneously coming up with his image of these guys, but he was reading from a prepared guidance in public testimony before the House Intelligence Committee. What was up with that?
Right. I think what I'd like to do to answer the question is two things. One, a quick quote from the guy who used to run the irregular warfare section at the Pentagon, who said last week on a national radio program that the national decision-making process in the United States government as it relates to Islam is completely controlled by the Muslim Brotherhood. That's the quote. And then the other piece,
this was
of
by
that
Rich
is,
Higgins, I believe, an old colleague of
correct.
Both of ours.
That's correct. And the
powerful
the
indictment.
It's a powerful indictment. The reality is, he also said the U.S. government is a tool for the Muslim Brotherhood, and he cited the examples that, you know, Saddam Hussein was hammering the Muslim Brotherhood. We killed him. Muammar Gaddafi, for all his faults, he's handling the, you know, hammering the Muslim Brotherhood. We had him killed. We removed Mubarak from power in Egypt in favor of the Muslim Brotherhood. Our leadership in the government is the tool. And this is the key. I believe that just those actions right there constitute legally treason on behalf of people that participate in that. But that aside, even if we push that aside for a moment and just say, okay, let's look at this professionally. If Director Clapper, for instance, Director of National Intelligence at the time, he made these ridiculous comments. If he doesn't know whether that's true or not, then he's incompetent. He's unprofessional at something that he has a legal duty to know. And that means he should be fired. But if he doesn't know things he's legally required to know as a part of his job in the national security realm, and Americans are dead in places like Orlando and San Bernardino and Fort Hood and Little Rock, Arkansas, and Boston, then that's criminal negligence. And we put doctors and lawyers in jail for that. So there is no excuse. But the reason that that has happened is because his office, just like office of senior generals and other officials and appointed leaders in the Pentagon and at the White House and the national security staffs, are relying on individuals that we can identify as members and leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood movement.
John Guandolo, this is such an incredibly distressing conversation, I have to say. And I spent a lot of time on this subject, as you know, but even for me, to hear these kinds of depictions of what's happened to our country and to its government is profoundly alarming. And I just want to ask, if you would, to stitch into what you've just said, the role that the Muslim Brotherhood, a group that is sworn to our destruction, that is adamantly, unmistakably, avowedly jihadist through and through, the progress that they have made in penetrating and influencing our government through something called the Countering Violent Extremism Program. Tell us what that so-called CVE initiative is and the role that the Brotherhood has played specifically in its conception and execution.
Well, I think if we want to know about CVE, we just need to look at its inception. And its inception came in Europe, specifically from the Brits, the British. And they got it specifically from Muslim Brotherhood leaders in Europe. And so they created this idea that we have to combat violent extremism because that's the problem. Because obviously the problem isn't Islam. The problem is just anybody who wants to be violent, and specifically people that stand for something that's extreme, like rabid adherence to the ideals of the Declaration of the Constitution, and are willing to be violent to defend it. they're violent extremists. And now what do we see if we just watch the fruit, if you will, of that dark system, which is CVE, contrary to the facts on the table? In other words, the facts that 100% of our enemy says they're Muslims waging jihad, we say the threat's violent extremism. And then we see the FBI director immediately after the Orlando shooting say something like, well, we're not actually sure what the motive is and how did we get there? And even, quite frankly, what I would say is more disturbing is when we have specifically members of our own Congress, and recently the thing that I'm talking about is a statement from a ranking member on the Homeland Security Committee, Tom Carper, who says this, quote, "While it is still not entirely clear why the killer carried out this attack," referring to Orlando, dot, dot, dot. So we have somebody over a week after the shooting. It's obvious he's a jihadi. We know what the motives are. Very easy, very simple. And yet we have a senior senator on the Homeland Security Committee in the Senate saying, it's not clear yet.
John, we got to hold the thought. We're going to come right back with more with John Guandolo of UnderstandingTheThreat.com straight ahead.
Visit us at Facebook.com/SecureFreedom with Frank Gaffney.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. When British voters cast ballots tomorrow on whether to remain in or leave the European Union, they will probably be deciding much more than that narrow question. This referendum may be freedom's last chance in Europe. Nations across the continent are already facing crushing regulation and galloping socialism dictated by unaccountable bureaucrats in Brussels. The European Union says they aren't allowed to control their borders or set their own immigration policies, and their citizens are prosecuted for speech the Eurocrats, Islamists, and the transnationalist left deem to be hateful. If Britain does exit, there's a chance that not just its people, but others across Europe will break free too. If, however, the Brits yield to the coercive threats from elites on both sides of the Atlantic, liberty and national sovereignty will continue inexorably to erode over there and here as well. This is Frank Gaffney.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back for an hour-long conversation with one of the smartest guys I know about the threat facing our country from the global jihad movement and the animating force behind it, the doctrine of Sharia, and the various ways in which this effort to impose Sharia on all of us, to force us to submit to Sharia, is moving forward inexorably, including notably at the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood. And John, we were just talking about the FBI, the director saying it wasn't entirely clear what the Orlando shooter Omar Mateer's motivations were. We have a senior senator, as you say, Tom Carper, the ranking member on the Senate Homeland Security Committee, saying it's not clear what the motive is. You've got the FBI going to the lengths of, I guess at the direction of the Attorney General, but in any event, stripping out certain words from the shooter's own remarks that describe specifically why he was doing what he was doing. Again, give us a sense of, from the guy who's been inside the belly of the beast, what on earth is going on here?
Well, we've got several things going on, and I think it's appropriate to say when it's this clear what they're doing, and this attorney general, the previous attorney general, this secretary of Homeland Security, and the previous, and now this FBI director, who are intentionally distorting the truth about the enemy. What can we call that other than not just willful blindness? But this goes towards we are helping the enemy in what they're doing. And if you want to know at the FBI, I mean, as a case agent or even as a supervisor of a squad, the pressure on them to stick with the narrative, which is being driven by the White House, we know that when the FBI Director Mueller was told by the White House under the Obama administration, you will work with the Islamic Society of North America. And instead of saying, well, I'm going to resign instead of working with terrorists, he just did. And that is what is shocking to me. When we do our training, UTT does its training, and we see that, number one, none of the cops know what we're putting out about the network here and about what Sharia actually is. Yet they all come to understand it's factual and it's true. Number two, they realize this information is critical to protecting my family and this community. And then when they get training from the FBI or the Department of Justice that specifically is exactly opposite what we're telling them, and they realize that what they're getting from the feds is absolute horse dung, they realize how dangerous the situation is. And while good men and women in the FBI are at the ground level trying to protect us from people that want to shoot us and blow us up, their lack of understanding of the strategic threat, their lack of understanding of Sharia as not only what they seek to impose, but the blueprint for how these guys operate, and their refusal to even look at it is what's brought us to this place. And the fact that they have the very same Muslim Brotherhood organizations advising them at local field offices, from the Muslim Public Affairs Council, Muslim American Society, working directly with the FBI, it's outrageous.
It is outrageous. And you know, the term that just keeps cropping up for me as you're talking, John Guandolo, is malfeasance. It's really a failure to perform one's responsibilities competently and effectively. And our mutual friend and colleague Steve Coughlin has, of course, written a book called Catastrophic Failure, which documents how much of this is has come about. One of our other colleagues, Claire Lopez, and I have written a book recently entitled See No Sharia, Countering Violent Extremism and the Disarming of America's First Lines of Defense. And, of course, Phil Haney has recently written a book, a former Customs and Border Patrol officer, about his horrific experiences inside the government, called See Something, Say Nothing. And you've written a book, John Guandolo, called Raising a Jihadi Generation. This is a body of work that the American people need to understand, be exposed to, instead of the kind of whitewash that we've been getting, not just from our government, but as you said earlier, from a press that seems as complicit in misleading us as are those who are in official positions themselves.
Well, I think you bring up a big point, and I wrote about this both last week and this week, as it relates to this Marxist-socialist collaboration inside our government, the penetration of Marxists inside our government at a very deep bureaucratic level, policies that have been put forth, anti-Second Amendment. And really, I don't even like that term, because the Second Amendment is not what guarantees our rights. The Declaration guarantees the rights and the inalienable rights, which are not just life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. Obviously, the founders said among the inalienable rights are these three. But the right to defend and protect yourself, as the federal judge said in the U.S. Versus Heller, was, or the District of Columbia versus Heller, was, you know, the right to keep and bear arms to protect yourself long predates the establishment of even the United States. So it was an understood thing. But the assault on that, the assault on our free speech to actually speak truth about a real threat that's factually true, and the way they are coming against our military, decreasing the Marine Corps and Army combat forces, letting our Navy and the combatant ships disintegrate, decreasing our nuclear capabilities, not protecting our borders, all of these issues, bringing refugees, only Muslim refugees from hostile countries, into this. It can only be looked at objectively as a intentional collaboration with our enemies, the jihadis, who are preparing to launch massive attacks in the United States and Europe based on their strategy. I mean, right now,
there's no secret about it.
That's right.
Yeah. John Guandolo, I mean, somebody listening to this conversation may conclude that this is a, sort of a wild conspiracy theory. What you've described is so unimaginably a betrayal of the public trust and the oath of office and the duty, well, among other things, to self-preservation, for crying out loud, that it's probably incomprehensible to people who haven't actually studied the facts. And I just want to give you an opportunity to respond to that sort of, well, comforting idea that what you're saying can't possibly be true.
Well, I would just say the facts on the ground are true. What I think nails it is that since really 2006 and even 2005, while I was still in the FBI, the things that I spoke about and taught about then came true. When I was working with Steve Coughlin and he briefed, you know, when we were with SEG, Strategic Engagement Group, and in November 2010, he briefed members of Congress about the coming of this revolution in the Middle East and laid out how we know, why we know. And in January 2011, it happened, and it happened and has unfolded exactly as he and we have predicted. And the reason that this is critical is because you can't do that if this is just a wild hair. You can't keep getting it right. When I briefed law enforcement officials in September 2014 that the Islamic Community Center Phoenix was a place from which jihadis were going to launch jihad, and I laid out why it was extremely problematic, and then the two guys who go to Garland, the two jihadis who go to Garland, Texas to try to kill Pamela Geller and people at the Draw Muhammad cartoon event came out of the Islamic Community Center Phoenix. And now the people in Arizona are very interested in our work and want more of it because of the fact that when you know this stuff and you know what Sharia says and you know how this enemy communicates, you can do predictive analysis, which is something our military and civilian intelligence agencies have not done since 9/11.
Yeah, and they're supposed to be doing. They're expected to be doing it. This is, put in layman's terms, predictive analysis sounds pretty highfalutin. It's just connecting the dots, folks. But if you're not allowed to see the dots, and it becomes a career-threatening offense to actually try to connect the dots, it's not unreasonable for people in government to say, you know, I'm just going to give that a miss, which is putting us all at risk. John Guandolo is our guest. We're going to have another segment or two with him about the threat we're facing. You've come to the right place if understanding the threat is what you want. More with John Guandolo straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're talking about the threat specifically from Islamic supremacism and those who practice it by waging jihad for the purpose of imposing, well, on all of us, this threat of oppression and repression and totalitarianism in the name of Islam. John Guandolo is one of the people in the country who understands this best. Thank God he is teaching others, including our first lines of defense, about what he knows and making up as a result for some of the serious shortfalls in all of these issues and our understanding of them as a result of government policy. And John, I just wanted to ask you about one piece of this that I'm struck by, and that is the degree to which, as you said a moment ago, that the Constitution is under assault from the Muslim Brotherhood, for sure, another organization many of us haven't heard of called the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. Talk, if you would, a little bit about this effort to suppress freedom of speech and how it's operationalized under this rubric they call Islamophobia.
Well, I think in a minute I can summarize this as best as possible. Islamophobia is a term that was created by the Muslim Brotherhood, the International Institute of Islamic Thought, which is based in Herndon, Virginia, here in the U.S., came up with that term in the late 90s. And what it refers to is they thought that the term homophobia was able to push the agenda of the homosexuals forward in the United States. And so if it put people back on their heels to be called a homophobe, we'll use the term Islamophobia. And what it's used for is imposing the Islamic law of slander, which in Sharia says you can't say anything about Islam, it's Prophet Allah, that a Muslim would dislike. So it's very different from our understanding of slander in Western law, and specifically U.S. law. So that was the premise. Now what they have done is taken this Islamic law of slander, and when you merge it with the Muslim Brotherhood's idea, stated doctrine, and strategy of waging civilization jihad by their hands, getting our leaders to do their work for them. I shared some examples when we talked about the U.S. government disposing of Saddam Hussein, Muammar Gaddafi, Hosni Mubarak, all people who are hammering the Muslim Brotherhood. That's civilization jihad by our hands. We, the U.S. government, wrote the constitutions in Iraq and Afghanistan, which created Islamic republics under Sharia. That's civilization jihad by our hands. So what they're doing is getting our leadership to do their bidding for them. It's our leadership telling us that this is not about Islam and that you need to shut up, that you can't do these programs in the United States. It was the Muslim Brotherhood, Muslim Public Affairs Council, Islamic Society North America, and Hamas, doing business as the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, going to the White House in 2012 and saying, you know, these training programs in the government that talk about Sharia and the Muslim Brotherhood offend us. And what did the White House do? They had them shut down. What did the chairman of the Joint Chiefs do? He shut that down and publicly chastised the lieutenant colonel on national television for having such a course. And the FBI director shut it down. DHS shut it down. As a matter of fact, sources of mine in the FBI that I know personally said that when headquarters said, we need to see your presentations you've been given, and these are people that I trained in the FBI, and the headquarters came back and said, well, you can't teach this anymore. This is all not factual. And the FBI agents' responses were, oh, it's not factual, huh? Well, then you better let the federal judges know and the defense attorneys know that this is Brady material that people can now sue and bring it back into court, because what I've entered are things that have been put in affidavits or stated in court or court documents or evidence already entered that lays this stuff out. And then, of course, it just gets dropped and nothing happens, but you still can't teach the material. All of this is the Islamic law of slander being imposed through this idea of Islamophobia. And when we go back to the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas network working directly with the Marxists, you know, the left says, shut up or we'll destroy your character, we'll besmudge your reputation. The jihadis say, shut up or we'll kill you. And they have killed people in furtherance of this. That's what this whole thing is. And that's their number one mechanism to impose this silence within our system. And it's why people who sit through 4 hours of our training and the kind of discussions you and I are having walk out knowing more about the threat than the average counterterrorism agent in the FBI.
Yeah, and unfortunately members of Congress as well. John Guandolo, and so many more things to talk about, but just very quickly, let me touch on a couple. You mentioned, of course, this effort, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation's 10-year program of action aimed at shutting down by criminalizing, prohibiting and criminalizing internationally expression that offends Muslims. And that's now been embraced by and is seemingly being implemented by our own government, among others. You're talking about the extent to which organizations like the Council on American Islamic Relations are promoting this falsehood of Islamophobia, some kind of irrational fear of Islam, and a great industry of which you and I are said to be part that is engaged in sort of manufacturing falsehoods and offenses against Islam when it's anything but that. And I guess in closing, I'm struck, as you must be, John Guandolo, at the progress that these guys have made over the past 50 years of operating in our country in under our noses, by and large, without us being aware of it. And I just ask you, as you mentioned several times there, civilization jihad being waged by our own hands is at the core of what the Muslim Brotherhood is doing here. And if you would just sort of wrap up by talking about specifically the lessons learned from, well, Europe especially, but also here, John, with respect to the infrastructure that the Muslim Brotherhood has built on both sides of the Atlantic that is at the disposal of and is being used by the guys who aren't into that stealthy, you know, patient, subversive jihad. They're into the violent kind. And therefore, what makes the Brotherhood so much a terrorist organization and a danger to us all?
Well, I would say this, that the reality of their success is right in front of our noses with the Orlando incident and Omar Mateen killing, 49 people in the bar in Orlando. Our response was, it's guns, it's Christians' fault, we still don't know what the motive is. That is, catastrophic failure. That, to repeat the title of Steve Coghlan's book, that's catastrophic failure. And the enemy has got to be looking at it, and somewhere in their command structure, wherever they are, they have a whiteboard with a big box and it says still stupid, and they check it every day. When we do these kinds of things, when our leaders do these things, I would say the lessons learned are that neither the European leaders nor the American leaders have learned any lessons. What we know, what people that are still thinking right now, is that we can no longer tolerate that. And I would say these discussions that we have when other people who don't get it, who are in positions that should, I don't think the discussion needs to continue to be cordial. These are dangerous people. They're either grossly incompetent or they're intentionally dangerous. But in either case, they're enemies of the United States, and they should be treated as such. You have a Hamas organization wearing suits a block away from the U.S. Capitol on New Jersey Avenue in the Council on American Islamic Relations. And we do nothing about it. Our FBI does nothing about it.
To the contrary, they wind up being wined and dined at the White House, among other agencies of the United States government, and until recently, unfortunately, including your former agency, the FBI. John Guandolo, we have to pause for one last break. We'll be right back with more right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're visiting with John Guandolo, the last segment of this very special conversation with a man who really does understand the threat we're facing from the global jihad. John, you have given us a lot to think about, and one piece of this that is particularly frustrating to me, and I know to you as well, is that last week, the Congress of the United States overwhelmingly, the House of Representatives specifically, overwhelmingly voted to extend this so-called countering violent extremism training program across the country and has allocated $50 million in previously appropriated funds for that purpose. John, first of all, knowing what you do about this countering violent extremism program, knowing who have been the architects of it, knowing what we're not allowed to say or to think or to be trained in as it goes forward, what would your estimate be is going to be the likely effect of ramping up this project in law enforcement agencies around the country?
Yes, I would say it's the same as the government, you know, giving hundreds of billions of dollars to Iran, the number one nation state sponsor of terrorism in the world. It's we're giving money to the very groups that are trying to silence us, and the very same groups that represent ISIS and Al Qaeda. These are not this is not an organizational war. This is a threat from a global Islamic movement. These guys are a part of that movement. The Supreme Court has said that being a part of something like this, you can't sift through which are the good parts and which are the bad parts. The assumption legally is that all parts serve the greater cause. And in this case, the greater cause is they're seeking to destroy our way of life and overthrow our constitutional republic.
And John Guandola, that, just to be clear, that is not your assertion. That is not the musings, the imaginings of even people who are knowledgeable and expert in the subject. That is the explicit stated purpose of the Muslim Brotherhood, and for that matter, the other Islamic supremacist organizations, is it not?
That is exactly right. And what I find as I go around the country, when you have district attorneys, county attorneys, state attorneys, law enforcement people at the personnel at the state level, or even sometimes the federal level, they are astounded that these groups like ISNA, NAIT, CARE, Muslim Americans are not already indicted, shut down. We have their money and all their leaders in jail, as well as the people in our government and in our communities that are materially supporting them and aiding and abetting them. So yes, this is not a matter of conjecture. This is all a matter of fact. It is the issue is a matter of will to actually fight the enemy instead of surrendering to them. Or in the case of, you know, I think leaders at DHS and the Attorney General's office actually aiding and abetting them.
John, let me ask you about one issue that's just come to my attention. I listen from time to time to National Public Radio, and they have just taken on a sponsor recently called the Zakat Foundation. And I just wonder, would you shed light on what is Zakat and what does a Zakat Foundation do with such funds as it receives from the Muslim community?
To cut right to the chase, in Islamic law, Zakat, because it comes right out of the Quran, there are eight categories of Zakat. And what Zakat is it is mandatory giving by Muslims. It's a mandatory fee that they have to pay every year. All Muslims who reach the criteria for a given year, they have to pay it. As a matter of fact, I'll remind your listeners that the President of the United States, while in a foreign country, said it, we need to make it easier for Muslims to pay their zakat. And so the eight categories are listed in Islamic law as a part of mandatory giving for all Muslims who reach the criteria, which most of them obviously do. And the seventh category, I'm just going to read it verbatim. The seventh of the eight categories that the zakat has to be split among is those fighting for Allah. The seventh category is those fighting for Allah, meaning people engaged in Islamic military operations for whom no salary has been allotted in the army roster. So 1/8 at a minimum of all zakat collected by every Muslim on the planet goes to fund jihad, what we call terrorism. And by the way, there are other categories in there that are also used, like providing money for the needy. That is often includes families of the shaheeds, those who kill themselves or die in jihad, etc.
John, what this public radio system is doing now, in the name of helping call attention to one of its sponsors, is using basically a publicly funded entity to promote an entity that is involved by its very nature in assisting not simply charitable good works, perhaps, but at least in part, the jihad. I mean, this is unbelievable, and it's happening again. You mentioned earlier a comparison to the so-called nuclear deal with Iran, and what a travesty that was. Well, this is another travesty because NPR was also involved in enemy propaganda enabled by another of its sponsors, the Plowshare Fund, promoting a very, very, very dangerous deal, so-called deal with this Islamic Republic of Iran. Talk for a moment, if you would, about what it has meant to people like you doing jobs protecting the rest of us, if instead of using the facts of the kind that you've developed here with us, there are now considerations that are deemed to be more important, like civil rights and civil liberties, that are now constraining how FBI agents or, you know, prosecutors or others, military and intelligence included, do their jobs on behalf of the American people.
It can be very frustrating, but I don't get bogged down in that. I think the objective here is to defend the Republic. I believe, based on all of the indicators out there, that we are in a very dangerous situation. As the global Islamic movement turns its focus from the Islamic countries to the West, Europe and North America, we are going to see a massive increase in actual violent, both at the national and in local areas, but massive increase in violence coming from the jihadis. And it won't just be one guy in Orlando, it'll be a dozen or 50. And that idea, it'll be, you know, in one place you might have 50, and across the country you have 10 or 20 things going on at once. So you literally have just what people probably today think is inconceivable. What I think is most difficult to swallow is not that the jihadis are doing that. That's what they do. You know, if you have a rabid dog and you bring it into your house and bites your child, that's your problem. That's a mistake you made. You know, a rabid dog is going to do what a rabid dog does, and you have to deal with it. But when people who are working in our government and swear an oath, a legally binding oath to the Constitution, are literally aiding and abetting the enemy and materially supporting terrorism by providing funding, by providing propaganda, in the case of the White House, this administration providing money and arms to known al-Qaeda and Muslim Brotherhood groups in Syria and Libya, these are crimes, and the way we're founded is that the final adjudicator in America are the people.
Yep. John Guardolo,
we need
with
to
that,
hold people accountable.
We have to hold them accountable indeed, and you're doing your part. Thank you so much for joining us here at Secure Freedom Radio, for the work you do at UnderstandingTheThreat.com, your important book, Raising a Jihadi Generation. Come back to us again very soon, my friend. I hope the rest of you will do the same again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.